This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 8, for October 27th, 2017. Saurian Brandy, you're a fine girl. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I am one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord. Great to see you, although I can't see you, so great to hear you, but I can't hear you. What am I going? I don't even know what I'm going for here.
Are you sure there's anyone out there?
I don't know. Raise your hand if you're here. There we go. Wonderful.
Is there Beaming anybody to join me, out there?
As always, are Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hello.
And Mr. Craig Stepp.
I'm receiving a subspace message. Hold on a second. There we go.
Okay.
I'm done. I'm receiving a subspace fax.
Several distress calls at once.
Subspace smoke signal.
The Indian planet.
And how are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Doing well. Healing up nicely from an appendectomy last week, so thanks for giving me the time off. That worked out well. No Wednesday night was... I'm thinking, I don't have to record a podcast. I can enjoy a nice, quiet evening home. Ow! And then there we went.
The slight sting of non-podcasting hit you.
Well, think of it as losing a tiny bit of weight. You know, it helps you with your diet, I guess.
Don't eat for 2 days. Yeah, that helps.
Right.
I really want one of those little medical scanner things that heals up the skin with... So I could use one of those right now where they just wave the green light over your skin and it magically disappears. Please, somebody invent one of those tomorrow.
I would say as long as it knows when to stop. You know, I'm just concerned. It's like, well, it's going to start making a hole. It's going to start. You know, when they did Stamets nose, was it going to go the other side if he kept going? I don't know. What
wave it over his mouth once or twice. See what happens.
Hey, doctor, can you just beam this thing out?
Not yet.
More about Stamets later.
Yeah. Indeed. But right now it's time to open subspace chatter. We have a lot of stories here to cover, and we're going to start right off with Chuck with a very good news story.
Good news, everyone. From Variety, Star Trek Discovery is renewed for season 2 by CBS All Access. There is your good news. Show's over. Okay, we can end on a high note.
And done.
Star Trek Discovery has been renewed for a second season by CBS All Access. The new installment of a decades favorite franchise premiered at the end of September on CBS Television Network. What rock do they think we were living under?
I know, right?
We need to set this up. The series also broadcasts its first episode on the I. To the tune of 9.6 million viewers and 1.9 in the coveted 18 to 49 demo. Oh, we're out of that demo, boy. Well, Craig's still in the demo for a while.
for a few more months. Yeah, two more months.
He got us renewed. So there you go.
In just 6 episodes, Star Trek Discovery has driven subscriber growth, critical acclaim, and huge global fan interest for the first premium version of this great franchise. Mark DeBevoise.
Yeah.
DeBevoise.
DeBevoise.
Right. Des Moines.
Des Moines.
President and COO, CBS Interactive, said in the statement, quote, "This series has a remarkable creative team and a cast who have demonstrated their ability to carry on the Star Trek legacy."
Oh, say it like a pirate. He's a pirate. Go ahead. Say it like a pirate.
A pirate?
We are extremely proud of what they've been accomplished and are thrilled to be bringing fans a second season of this tremendous series.
We're here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy the buffet. So that's great news. Of course, I believe the stories we've been hearing is that our second season will probably be in 2019.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, it's now, a high production show. I can give them some respect on that.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping that the lead time would be less because you have sets, those type of things. You have your, you don't have to do a lot of casting at this point, but you still have to, funny enough, write the stories.
Yeah.
And it seems like if they're going to do it the way they did this season, you have to pretty much have them all done.
More
so that you can
tribbles.
Tie everything together. More tribbles.
Hey, can we
have produced 5 more tribbles?
And somebody pointed out that on the set of After Trek, I haven't gone back to see if it's true, but it's like every week on After Trek, there are more tribbles all over the place.
Oh,
I don't know.
I
have to go
looked.
Back and
look. Yeah, I got to go back and look.
Yeah. I've noticed a few, but I hadn't really been paying attention to them.
I've been giving more priority to watching Discovery a second or third episode each week than than going to watch After Trek, sorry to say.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, one thing they didn't mention in this article, and I guess we'll find out later, is actually how many episodes will be in the second season.
Right, because the initial order for this first season was 12, and then they got greenlit for 3 more episodes.
Yeah.
And so you don't know, is it 12 again? Is it 15? 23. Is it 22?
Yeah, 23.
Okay, there's your answer. You heard it from Chuck.
Wait, 23? I mean, normally Star Trek, regular TV shows, they have about that many.
23,
I
20,
say
50, 26.
50. Do I hear 60? 60. 60.
Going once, going twice. They can't even produce them all in a year.
You get a pipeline going.
Yeah, an assembly line. It's okay.
We got a double D2 episodes this week.
Just get some of the writers from the Orville over here. They'll help out. They crank it out fast.
Some of them are up to speed on Star Trek already. They're set to go.
Well, I was reading an article about that, and what you alluded to, Chuck, when you said that Discovery will be possibly out in 2019, or Clinton said that. There was an article. It was with the producers of the Orville, and they were talking about if I'm trying to remember if they said that it was renewed. I think they're close to renewing that as well. But they said that at this time they couldn't even do like a back 9 because it was kind of late in the season a little bit, and the sets have been taken apart. Yeah. So there's that whole thing with, okay, now we're renewed. We got to write the stories. Now let's put the sets back together and even know what sets you need. So there's a lot of, they need some lead time for that. So
right. They did say that for Discovery, they had the story idea for season 2, but they still have to write all the episodes. So it's very early in the stages for that. All right. Something to look forward to in 2019.
Setting my countdown calendar already.
And we don't know the date, but that's okay. And go. All right. Next up is Craig.
So it looks like although we've had plenty of success with Star Trek Discovery, is not because of piracy, piracy.
You want to try that again?
This is the one I got to read like a pirate.
Like Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob.
SpongeBob.
Are you ready, kids?
Yes, read the story, will you?
Yeah.
Because on this show,
I pick is SpongeBob. I don't know.
Yeah. So keep in mind that this was written about the time Star Trek Discovery premiered. So it says Star Trek Discovery premiered last night on CBS. The only hour of the series that is going to be get a network aired release. And in 24 hours, it was cracked, pirated. It cracked Pirate Bay's top 10 most illegally downloaded TV shows. Entertainment Weekly and IndieWire first reported that the show's illegal popularity. 4 hours later, it was listed in the 9th most illegally downloaded show. Strangely, the second episode of the TV series, which is only available on the paid subscription of CBS All Access streaming, is only listed at number 14 on the most downloaded.
Everybody wanted to see the first one, but didn't care as much about the second.
Well, that's interesting. I would like to see. I don't know where one goes to get the numbers on this type of thing in a normal way of
things.
The
dark web, of course.
Nielsen does it on the dark web.
Oh, do they? Oh, I haven't got access to that page. Sorry,
hey,
I didn't.
Hey, we'll give you a dollar if you let us figure out what you've been watching on the interwebs.
You talk to the Russians.
They know everything.
Right. So, well, even though I know you mentioned earlier we got 15 episodes, I still consider it 13 because I think the first two are kind of a little bit on the throwaway.
What?
Yeah, the first two.
You got to get the backstory
kind of set things
going.
Up, but yeah, that's about
prologue.
It.
I mean, it's prologue rather than flashback, you know, yeah. The way I see it.
I'd rather have that than the Arrow thing where they just keep flashing back for 5 years.
Oh, they don't keep flashing back because that would be the Flash. I don't know what they're doing. But anyway.
Well, there is a Flash.
What was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say here.
Hey,
well, let's
happens.
Just move on because I forgot. It's
second episode, third episode. You were asking about numbers.
Is that no? Help? Can't okay. Can't remember.
Well, I do think
just
it's interesting.
I have a pen to write things down that I'll forget. So
yeah. Well, you know, it's like some. I find it interesting that, of course, they complain. I understand that it's all copyright material and it is technically theft when you go to throw it on a BitTorrent. But at the same time, haven't we seen a lot of movies? Not just Star Trek related, but movies and TV shows that are pirated a lot, yet they go, oh, it's the most successful thing. We're setting records for the September release of a movie.
HBO is like, HBO, I think the most pirated show, and the numbers may have changed, but I think is Game of Thrones.
Right.
And it does huge, huge for HBO. It's HBO, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
I don't have the premium services, so... it doesn't seem to hurt it. I mean, I suppose you could theoretically say, well, X number more people would watch it rather than pirate it if they couldn't get it illegally, but I don't think everyone would. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to overall affect it. And certainly it seems if you're going to be renewed for a second season like Discovery is, it's not hurting it. I'm not trying to justify piracy, but I'm saying that it's not hurting it. It perhaps is helping promote it a little bit even.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you end up with that word of mouth kind of thing.
Yeah. People I would view it as another metric. Yeah. It's something you can measure. Why not take advantage of that and say, all right, and work on converting those people to subscribers.
Well, and worst case, like as I mentioned, I think a lot of it, you end up with the word of mouth thing too. People go, oh, I saw it. It was great. Or, you know, and then those words spread out and then more people that don't want to spend the time trying to figure out BitTorrent, much less use it, just go see it or pay for CBS. And I think it kind of feeds on itself rather than being a detriment entirely.
Yep. Yep.
All righty.
Next story.
Right, you'll agree. Okay. Good night, guys.
Yep. That's right. Good night. Good night. And kids, stay in school. I don't know what
I'm making a note of when that big pregnant pause was, so in case I ever get to editing this thing.
Okay. So it will stay in, other words.
Yeah, pretty much.
What I'm hearing? Okay, I thought so. All right, up next, this is a story from Orlando Weekly.
Is he related to Orlando Bloom?
Let me check, and the answer is no.
Okay, good.
Because that was a pirate thing, though, also. Once dead rumors come back to life. Oh, maybe it is a pirate of the Pirates of the Dead from the Pirates of the Caribbean. Indicate Universal's response to Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary. It says, last week we shared details of the rumored new Star Trek attraction coming to Universal Orlando. That plan is actually a long canceled project that seems to now be back on the front burner. Universal has also recently shared details of other projects that were believed to be dead, including a Hogsmeade expansion replacing Dragon Challenge and a new nighttime lagoon show at Universal Studios Florida.
Mm.
The rumor of a new Diagon Alley expansion replacing Fear Factor Live and other projects that have previously believed to be dead, like the Secret Life of Pets trackless dark ride,
oh boy,
all now seem very much alive. The rumblings regarding these various projects being resurrected may point to a bigger plan at Universal.
Okay.
So a follow-up on that is that it really is just a rumor at this point about where this attraction would go, what it would actually be. Mm-hmm. A story goes that they wanted to do filming of the live action pieces for this when they were filming Star Trek IV. And of course, we have no word on if and when there will be a Star Trek IV.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Voyage Home.
Yeah. Yes. Like, well,
because they're resurrecting these things. I could just see some old guy going, "Hey, this Star Trek thing's hot again. What do we got in the files?"
What Come on, you, Chuck. He's Spock's talking about brain, the Kelvin timeline.
Spock's brain the ride. What?
So 4.2.0 reboot. That one. The next Star Trek film. But since we don't have any word on that, it's hard to do any filming, and you're not going to get the cast and the sets and everything put together just to film this part of it. Now, one of the things that they could do, and again, it would be a cost, you'd have to get all the actors together. I believe for the Guardians of the Galaxy attraction, which is at Disneyland, which replaced the Tower of Terror, it really is just the actors against green screen. So you could do something where you don't have to have an actual set. You can use a virtual set that they would be on. But don't know exactly where this would go. Rumor was, since they closed Terminator 2 3D, that it was going to go there. But now that's going to be a different property, an unnamed property, but not Star Trek going in that spot. So we'll have to wait and see if this actually comes true or not. I remember going to the old Star Trek attraction, which was at Universal Orlando. And that one was put yourself into Star Trek. You got dressed up in uniforms and you were green screened into you're green screened into a conversation between you, Leonard Nimoy, and William Shatner.
Oh, fine.
About how to do the parts. And then you go and it's an adventure with you're on the Enterprise and involves the Klingons, and there's some stock footage and some new live action footage in there, and you get a souvenir videotape
to
take home with you. So if you want to see what that looks like, go to YouTube and search for Star Trek Adventure Universal Studios, and you'll see all people have uploaded their various versions of that.
I didn't. Joe from the Megapodzilla, he posted that, didn't he?
Version of that? Well, he probably did, because I know a lot of, I've transferred mine, but I haven't posted it.
I'm going to have to ask about that, because I think he did. Now, you know, Carowinds, the theme park near my house, was owned by Paramount for a while when they had a few parks. And, I didn't work there at that point, but I certainly went to Carowinds. It was fun to see Klingons walking around. They had a Borg ride, which is now called the Nighthawk. And it was a lot of fun to be there. James Doohan came one time.
Cool.
I think somebody else may have come and visited the park, but it was fun being a Star Trek fan and having it just down the road for a change, because living on the East Coast, all the conventions or stuff are all in California. So
or New York.
Yeah, I was a teenager. I'm like, well, that might as well be on the other side of the earth, or out of this world.
And now you go over to San Diego every other week.
Yeah, I'll be there in a week and a half.
Alrighty, let's move along to our next story from Chuck.
This is one that I never really thought about. This is from Forbes.com. Star Trek movies and Saw films are more alike than you think.
What?
Well, that title intrigued me right there. We are only 1 week out from the release of Jigsaw. Said Lionsgate offering is, of course, the eighth installment of the Saw franchise and the first new one since the series came to an alleged end in 2010. Alleged end. I like that. But in this nostalgia-based and IP-driven culture, you can't keep a once-popular franchise down for too long, especially when a movie like Jigsaw isn't terribly expensive. and its arrival comes on the heels of the new Star Trek series on CBS All Access. Itself, the first new Star Trek show since Enterprise went off the air in 2005. Man, I feel old.
Yeah, I know, right?
What do these two items have in common? Well, not much, except for the strange and, I'm assuming, entirely coincidental similarities between the Saw franchise and the Star Trek feature film franchise. So, without further ado, in honor
there was a ship and they had a crew and they... Wait, no, that's not... No.
Wait, what?
They played musical instruments and danced around with hippies. No. Without further ado, in honor of the eighth Saw movie, here are eight bizarre similarities between Star Trek and Saw. I'm not going to read all these in great detail, but the first film stands apart from its sequels. Star Trek the Motion Picture is a long, meditative, and somewhat existential sci-fi drama that is more concerned about the exploration and answering big questions than in thwarting a villain's evil plot. And while James Wan and Lee Whannell's first Saw isn't exactly on higher artistic plane, it's something of a grim, moody, and variation of Seven. It also features a number of named actors like Cary Elwes, Danny Glover, Monica Potter, etc. Okay, point number two, the first sequel sets the template. Both Saw 2 and Star Trek 2 The Wrath of Khan set the tone for what was to come. Point number three, the second, third, and fourth installments set up an unofficial trilogy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wait. Okay, wait. Ooh. Wrath of Khan.
Yes. Search for Spock. Voyage Home.
Oh, okay. I thought somehow they got, Final Frontier in there. I went, oh.
Set up the whole thing for those next two movies.
Right. The Genesis Planet, let's go find Spock. They got back. They had to put his Katra back in his body, the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah, and then Star Trek V pointed out why we can't have nice things. So anyway.
Part five was a whiff. Well, part six,
speaking of that,
was a return to form. Yes. As I have Star Trek VI poster right in front of me in the studio. Part six works as a series finale, even if part seven kept things in the air. Interesting. And, Generations poster is right next to it. Part seven is a passing of a torch entry. Yeah. I don't know the Saw film, so I'm just going, that's true for Star Trek. Yeah,
I don't know either.
Hey, take the word for it. It's all detailed in the article. And once again, you can always go to thetopicistrek.com. And look for the show notes on this episode, and we have links to all the stories.
And this one, I don't buy this one as a generality. I think too many people use it, but they say the even number entries are better than the odd number entries, kind of, sort of.
Even they say kind of, sort of. So.
Yeah, well, don't get me started. Jigsaw,
Nemesis.
Jigsaw is totally a remake of Star Trek First Contact. That's their final point.
Say what?
I don't know, but I'm looking around the studio. My Star Trek posters in a new light. People got limbs cut off or something.
Found a head. I don't know. Anyway.
Interesting story from Forbes, no less.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah.
All right. From that high art, let's dip down. What? No, I don't think that's what we're doing here. We're going to move on to our next story from Craig.
Yes. And it looks like. Wait a minute. I lost my train of thought. Oh, it looks like we're closer to building Star Trek's deflector shields than you may think.
Really?
Yes. So over on the Nerdist website, I do watch the Because Science video or YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so sometimes I do catch these, and I think I did watch this one. Before movies like Star Wars determined that many space operas would look like and feel like going forward, shows like Star Trek determined the kind of technology that most of them would feature. As a predominant staple of Star Trek tech, ships would shoot phasers and protect themselves with some kind of deflector shield. The shields redirect dangerous and destructive energy in order to protect spaceship crews. Spaceships crew. Crews. I guess two plurals there. And what we know
they're on a cruise.
And what we want to know is, how would they work? And in the latest Because Science, it's called Shields Up. And he does, Kyle does talk about how it's possible to build or have a deflector shield to deflect things from. He says, try as we might, our own version of the famous force field, using the actual fields and designs that are real earth science, they're looking into right now. If we had a deflector shield that could surround a ship on its way to Mars, for example, it would solve the cosmic radiation problem. A real deflector shield is more than just a Roddenberry fantasy. It's a NASA dream.
Yay, another Star Trek thing coming to science.
Yeah.
Now, can we have them around our cars and stuff as well?
I think just that bounce would be off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. I got hit in the parking lot the other day. I come back from a vacation, I go to the grocery store, and got hit. So, yes, I would. Yeah. I'm
all. If you had a deflector screen, would not be a problem.
It would have bounced off on me.
Maybe you're
like a shopping cart.
Would that lower your insurance rates?
Yes, but your battery would die in a whole lot faster. So.
Yeah, I can only run the shield for like 2 minutes. Yeah. Anyway, go check out.
Oh, I left the shield on again. I need a jump. Can't get into the car though, because there's still a bit of shield left. It's very confusing.
Honey, do we have any new dilithium crystals?
Hold on, I left the shield on. Beep, beep. Get in. So anyway, I recommend watching Because Science. It's kind of fun when you start describing things. Anyway, but yeah, he was talking about the science behind it and deflecting stuff, and it was pretty cool. So I would definitely check it out.
All right. So check that out in our show notes. We'll have the link to that story. And up next, this comes to us directly from StarTrek.com, so you know it's true.
It's official.
Beam down to the Starfleet Academy experience.
Where?
The Starfleet Academy experience is beaming down to New Jersey beginning on October 28th.
That's Saturday.
The popular interactive exhibition, which immerses visitors in the iconic science fiction franchise, will enjoy an extended run at the Liberty Science Center, located in Liberty State Park in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Cool.
And they have several shots of different sets. And so they have a next generation bridge. I can't tell. Is that the battle bridge? I think that looks like the battle bridge.
Or it's the first gen bridge where they had the split captain's chair.
And then
it's like the Le Car of the Starfleet.
Yeah. And they have a couple of shots of exhibit hallways and so forth. The exhibition will once again offer visitors the chance to experience life as a Starfleet Academy cadet as they attend the Academy's career day in the 26th century. After student orientation, cadets visit multiple zones focusing on the training center's specialties: language, medical, navigation, engineering, command, and science. No red shirts, obviously. Follow these interactions. Cadets are assigned a specialty and a zone based on their individual training. Not only do participants have the opportunity to become a Starfleet cadet, but they also learn the actual science of the emerging technologies behind the fiction. So maybe they watch that video about deflector screens.
Right.
Such as a functioning tricorder, NASA's warp drive theory, and the latest experiments with phasers and teleporters.
Hold this phaser and watch this.
Yeah.
Like a dead Klingon in the...
Yeah, I was going to say there's a dead Klingon just kind of sadly on the, in the medical
bay. Strapped down, too.
Hey, there's actually two of them.
This lots is of cool. interactive screens and stuff. So, yeah. So if you're in the, not only if you're in the New Jersey area, in the area of Liberty State Park in Jersey City, please, if you go, send us some photos. We'd like to see this thing.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Hey, what's the deal with, the northern part of the United States getting all this Star Trek stuff? You got Ticonderoga and you got this.
Right.
What's next? We got to have something. Give us Star Trek. So, you know?
I'm looking closer at this med bay.
And oh, dear.
The Klingon, he looks like he's been mummified.
Oh.
It's like.
Wait a minute. He's from Discovery.
King Tutankhamun. And the medical tricorder is on a leash, so nobody steals it, apparently.
Yeah. You don't want the technology getting out of the 26th century.
That's the new training dummy for Starfleet. You have to give the Klingon mouth to mouth.
Yeah, it's an anatomical Annie of the 24th century. Use the alcohol wipe.
You got to sit there and give him compressions and then do it.
Man, have you been eating that gack again? All right, we're moving on from New Jersey at the moment.
Did these Klingons brush their teeth? I'm sorry.
No. Have you seen their teeth? No.
All right, I get the story that looks like it was ripped off the pages of Technorama. This is what we get for missing a couple of weeks, Craig.
Yeah, right.
From autoevolution.com, Star Trek shuttlecraft car is a sci-fi fan's wet dream. This is something, I'll tell you.
See if you can spot the discrepancy in the story as Chuck reads it.
Browsing the internet in search of a weird and wonderful cars, we spotted this Star Trek shuttlecraft vehicle, which is both. I'd imagine that this is something the guys from The Big Bang Theory would have bought, you know, before they had wives and kids that forced them to act like grown-ups. Somebody on Reddit spotted a car that looks a little weird. There were no further details made with the post. However, such a wacky machine could never hide from the all-seeing eye of the World Wide Web.
Suddenly Sauron.
That's what I was thinking, too. Ooh. Apparently, the shuttlecraft is owned by one Corey Mervis Boxcar.
If that is his real name.
Boxcar of Nevada, who uses it at the Burning Man. Oh, interesting.
Of course he does.
We can see... I got to increase my font size because I can't see. We can see little rust spots all over, so it's not fiberglass. From a distance, it looks like abandoned military surplus. Quote, I had two friends from high school who were Star Wars freaks, said Robert Strever, who built the shuttle. Wait, didn't it belong to...
Yes, I said, can you note the discrepancy in the story?
He might have built it, but he might have sold it to the other guy. Could be.
We'll keep reading the quote.
Oh, yeah, said Robert Strever, who built the shuttle in an interview last year. I was building movie and custom cars for a private company, and they were after me to build a land speeder so they could meet girls in it. So I did.
So I built this instead.
This is a chick magnet?
Where the quote and the rest of the story go together. We got a quote from this guy. We got to use it no matter what it is. Just throw that in there.
Alrighty.
But the vehicle itself is pretty interesting looking.
It is a car. I'm curious to know what the car underneath it is.
I can't remember if the articles.
The front wheels are obviously showing, so you can steer.
However, the chassis it sits on belongs to an archaic Ford Aerostar.
Oh, well, it's a minivan.
From the 20th century.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's a 20th
century
anomaly.
Vehicle.
The custom body perfectly resembles the famous TV series vehicle. Captain Picard would use this to descent to alien planets or on covert missions to infiltrate enemy ships.
Or have a dune buggy in the back of it, but that's another story altogether.
So it's on an Aerostar. It runs on gasoline, not dilithium crystals, while the odometer reads miles, not light years. Still, it could be worse. It could be on a Jeep Grand Cherokee. I don't know.
People have an agenda.
Look, somebody took the time to put a windshield wiper on the front and with the back.
One huge windshield wiper to cover the entire front of the thing.
In the front, yeah.
Because, you know, there's bugs in space. You don't want to hit those.
Those meteor showers, you got to wipe that stuff off.
But it's okay. It's electrostatically charged for when you run through an ion storm.
Now, does this have a deflector screen? That's what this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a 19-inch LCD, a deflector screen in the back.
Yeah, they got a deflector screen. That's what the windshield wiper's for.
Oh, I see. It's a windscreen. I see. It's a deflector screen.
It's interesting. I would have loved it when I was a teenager. I couldn't see my wife talking about, look what I bought.
Look how wide it is. You can't park this thing anywhere. This is totally impractical.
But so much fun.
Honey, look what I bought.
It's a space shuttle. It's a start. We come in practice, and that's the part you go to because it's just large.
When I read it was used at Burning Man, I went, yeah, okay, yeah, I buy it.
Yeah, anything. Yeah, it's all everything's good when it comes to Burning Man, whatever.
If you ever want to sell anything weird, there's your buyer.
Yeah.
All right, let's head back to Craig.
Yay. And Star Trek Discovery showrunners tease appearance by more classic aliens. It sounded like humans and Vulcans wouldn't be the only founding species of the Federation of Planets to appear in Star Trek Discovery. Comicbook.com caught up with Star Trek Discovery showrunner Aaron Harberts, and Gretchen J. Berg at New York Comic Con and asked them about the possibility of seeing more classic Star Trek aliens, such as the Andorians and the Tellarites, in future episodes of the prequel series. While the showrunners stopped short of giving a definitive answer, they hinted pretty heavily that these Federation co-founders would be popping up in the near future in the series.
We did have a mention of an Andorian tonsillectomy.
We did. Hopefully that's not it. But
yeah, that's true.
You get to see the tonsillectomy. Yeah. It's blue.
No, the next episode is like a surgery video.
Right.
So this is a quote. Let's just say I love Andorians a lot, Harberts teased. I love the color blue, and I think Tellarites are pretty cool. Yeah, I do too, Berg chimed in. So we may not go to those planets, but we may see some of those characters because they do belong to the Federation.
I would like to see the new incarnation of those characters because we just don't see them too much. I mean, the Andorians have been pretty, we'll call them static since the beginning.
Well, when you do the Andorians on Enterprise, they had moving antennae.
Right, right. So there's been some adaptations, but I'll be curious. Is it just going to look like a guy in a blue face and white wig? Or is it going to, are there going to be some prosthesis involved? Who knows?
Right. Because the Tellarites were a bit more alienish looking on Enterprise. So I'd like to see the same treatment to the Andorians.
Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of Andorians, just a little side note. We saw our favorite Andorian recently and Star Trek continues.
April Hebert.
Yeah. April Hebert was in there. I think I heard her voice first before we actually saw her, and I went, oh, that's got to be April. And sure enough, they showed the little view screen, and it was April, our tour guide, Chuck and I's, when we went to, Chuck and myself, and when we went to the Star Trek Experience in Vegas before it closed. And she was very nice and polite and told us everything about it. And maybe I should put a link to the show notes or a video that where we went behind the scenes. But it was cool to see her on there as an Andorian.
She's still in the Vegas area. I get up there periodically. I should see if we can do a meetup.
Very cool.
I'll be there in May.
I'll be there in January.
I'll be there someday.
You can stow away my luggage.
Okay. That's the tough part.
I thought you called him like a baggage handler. I thought you said you can still weigh my luggage.
No way.
That's right.
What?
That was mean.
Clinton, pull the car around, please.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm going to move on to the next story, if you please. Mm-hmm. This comes to us from TrekMovie.com. Dress, play, and brush your teeth like a Discovery crew member.
Okay, you're talking about the closing scene from Choose Your Pain?
Yes, with Star Trek Discovery came a whole new look and feel to Starfleet in the 23rd century. And that means not only a lot of new products inspired by props seen on the show, but also some props inspired by real-world 21st century products you can actually buy.
I can paint my Sonicare black and be just like Stamets.
Well, you don't have to paint that black. They actually used a Oreo Isa hybrid sonic toothbrush for that scene. The only difference they made to it was they took the bristles off, but those are actually toothbrushes.
Why would they take the bristles off?
To look futuristic.
To make it look even more futuristic.
Okay. So it's like sonically cleaning your teeth.
Yes. There's no bristles. So that is one thing you can get. Now, the next one is a bit of a cheat to say it's not really inspired, but you can't purchase it, is you can have your own official disco t-shirt.
Hey, I have a story to throw out about this.
They're bringing disco back.
You got to relive your disco days on us all of a sudden?
I saw those shirts on the show. I'm like, you get beat up if you were wearing one of those today.
Yeah. Well, get this. All right, so... You know, everybody, we were talking about this. Don't call it STD.
Right.
You know,
so I doesn't make any sense anyway.
So. Yeah. So I started calling it disco. So I said, last week we were on vacation. I was with the family and we were going back to the hotel. I said, well, you know what? I get to watch Star Trek Disco. And they were like, I just had a couple of beers. They're like, do you know what you just said? I was like, yeah, what? And I said, I'm going to watch Star Trek Disco. And anyway, at the end of this show, you know, they had a promo for the next episode. Yep. And I saw the shirts and I went, I've totally got to buy one of those because my family made fun of me saying it.
And some of that I have to believe some of that comes from work because we have a product called Discovery and everybody calls it Disco. Even some of the product names are abbreviated that way.
You know what? At our user conference, I'll wear this shirt walking around. Oh, he must be the Discovery guy.
Yeah. Hey.
Can I ask you a disco question?
Sure. Saturday Night Fever or no.
Yeah. Boogie Nights.
So that you can get at StarTrek.com, actually. You can also get your very own Ripper to navigate your home's mycelial network.
This one looks a giant
stuffed tardigrade.
You know, I could see my daughter Lisa liking one of these things.
It's about, it's about, what did you say, about 3 feet long and it's blue.
If that, yeah. It's a giant plump balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, pillow. It's a
big plush.
It's got big black eyes.
It's doll's eyes. You can get Discovery Uniform boots in shoe form.
If I hook the tardigrade up to a 12-volt car battery, what do you think will happen?
You'll get a fried tardigrade.
Too bad Clint doesn't have one. He can meet us in Vegas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I just was there and came back again.
Yeah.
Discovery Uniform boots in shoe form. What does that mean?
Oh, you get the shoes that they're using in that portion of it. You also can get the sneakers for off-duty, and the sneakers are Nike sneakers. Looks like all they did was take the swoosh off the side of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can order them custom so you can put your own color combinations together. Oh. You can also have a personalized message on the shoe's tongue. And the article says, ours says Tilly.
I'd say beam me up, Scotty.
I get mine to say disco on it.
Just to complete the ensemble.
Property of USS Shenzo.
They were having a fire sale. Oh! Too soon.
The back of them says Captain Giorgio.
Yeah. Oh.
Too soon. Comes with a little napkin. No, stop. Just stop now.
Hey, I'm curious. When did they ever wear boots? I've always seen them wear tennis shoes.
Well, no, they wear tennis shoes when they're jogging around, but they have. I think it's the away.
I was noticing some of the footwear when Captain Lorca turns and walks out of the shuttlecraft before Michael Burnham and Ash are about to take off. He walks down that ramp and there's some shots of his feet. If you watch the feet, you notice they have that splayed out sole. And I thought he was wearing shoes. I'm like, shoes? Yeah. So it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, yeah. If you look at the shot, in this article, there's a shot of somebody walking in the kind of boots. But if you also look at the shot of the sneakers, it's from that scene where Tilly is kicking Burnham in the foot,
right.
And you can see Ash Tyler's feet, and he's got
boots.
He's got the boots on.
Looks like he's got gold gold line, but they gold, gold edge. Yeah, on the everyone,
but all the shots I've seen, or at least I've noticed, it looks like they're wearing not these kind of shoes, but I mean, it looks like they're wearing some kind of tennis shoe looking with like a gold sole kind of.
Yeah.
To go along with the outfit. Not necessarily a boot, but I guess.
It says the official costume boots worn as part of Starfleet's uniform in Discovery feature a very specific sole named the Starfleet sole, which was licensed non-exclusively to CBS by Sully Wong. The company won't be selling Starfleet boots, but Trekkies will soon be able to buy a very special shoe made with the Starfleet sole.
Boots kind of look like something that Tuco and Nacho would wear on Breaking Bad.
Right.
Like very, very fancy with the inlay.
That was a show ahead of its time, clearly.
And you know, these Nike, these are men's sock shoes. Okay. Yeah. It looks like it's the top part is more fabric and it just has that cover over the tennis shoe.
Well, you know, if you're going to do cosplay and Nike's already selling the stuff, that makes it a whole lot easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like 50 bucks.
You get the disco t-shirt, you get the jogging pants, and get the shoes, you're done.
Yeah.
You look good there, like Clint, bucks. Dressed up as Tilly.
Thanks. I just had to grow up the hair and dye it, but other than that.
Get a wig. Oh, man. Oh, Dragon Con just went through my mind and it wasn't pretty.
Except Tilly has a goatee now, and I don't know. It's just,
hey, you know what, Chuck Clinton, you know what we should do is we should go to that Star Trek trivia panel, and I'll have disco shirts and these pants. I mean, these shoes, and jog in the room. Hey, yeah.
And sit behind the 15 other people in the disco t-shirts.
I shaved 6 minutes off my time. Wow. We haven't even gotten to the show topic yet.
All right. Well, folks, it's time to close up our section on subspace chatter.
Let's see what this button does.
Okay. Oh.
Close the bathroom door. Yeah. Hey, close the bathroom door.
Born in a barn? Born in a shuttlecraft?
And we're on to our main mission. We're going to take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject, which is actually two subjects kind of this week, because once again this week, we need the spoiler alert.
Oh, here we go. Spoiler alert.
Because our main topic this week is the episode 5 and episode 6 of Star Trek Discovery, being Choose Your Pain and Leth.
Is that how you say it?
Yes, I believe it is Leth.
Not Lethe. Not Lethe. Not Lethe.
You can say it any way you like, but I believe it's Leth. So let's go. I don't know if we want to tackle these separately because, again, this is one long story arc.
Hey, wait a minute.
We have two different things going on here.
Yes? That's Lathe.
No, that's not Lathe.
No, not sure Lathe. Is. I just called it that. That's okay. What it is.
All right. So. You at home, you whatever you want to call it, you can call it Frank. You know that
Raymond J. Johnson Jr.
You don't have to call him. Anyway, let's not do that bitch right now.
Because on this show,
the topic is Trek. Alrighty. Well, in our first episode, Choose Your Pain, we have Captain Lorca being held prisoner on board a Klingon ship. And we meet Harry Mudd. For the first time,
yeah.
Although we've met him before, but really this is kind of the first time we meet Harry Mudd. We also get introduced to Lieutenant Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
And we get to find out that the tardigrade is just not feeling it when it comes to helping out with these jumps. Matter of fact, it gets to the point where it just rolls up into a little ball and won't do anything.
Which leads me to wonder, okay, they said he pretty much expelled all his water. He dehydrated himself to go into survival mode.
How did he rehydrate in space?
Exactly. Okay, so like any science fiction, I guess you have to suspend science for a while, but I thought Star Trek was on a little higher science plane than that.
Yeah, I kind of would have.
That was the fiction part, not the science part.
Let's sprinkle some spores on him, shoot him off into space. Good luck.
If they had, because I thought, oh, well, they're going to release him into space. And what Burnham has there, because she had a jar with her, said it's liquid to rehydrate, you know, to get the fluids back into his body. But no, it was spores.
Yeah.
I guess you have to say the spores and he, when they kind of connecting, they were one with the cosmos. Getting very Stamets-y here all of a sudden. And, you know, just kind of got into a groove and just went with it, you know?
And what happened to Stamets? He was kind of a dick in the first few episodes, and then he gets hooked up to the spore drive, and now he's smoking weed.
Well, before we even get to that,
okay,
we get the fact that in the last scene, he walks away from the mirror.
And the reflection stays, which is really handy if you want to check the back of your hair.
It is.
Turn around real fast and look.
Yeah. We're not given any further clues on what just happened there, but I suspect there's some timey-wimey thing going on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people speculate mirror universe, and I'm thinking, well,
he'd have a goatee. Really,
well, also the fact that, it's a mirror universe, but it's not literally a mirror universe.
He's brushing his teeth with bristles.
And how did with the bristles. The other toothbrush has bristles. The doctor walked away, and his reflection went at the same time. So there's some sort of discontinuity between him and this reflection.
Right.
So that's an interesting speculation, and you know they're coming back to that.
Oh, absolutely. And I imagine sooner than later.
Well, then, you know, they mentioned that the tardigrade was having some frontal lobe issues, and, you know, I think it's kind of giving Stamets a little bit of a lobotomy.
Yeah, but the mirror didn't have the issues. The mirror was showing his reflection.
Well, two things are happening. I think either they're foretelling the mirror universe, because I know they are doing a mirror universe episode.
This is why we run spoiler before we start talking. Okay.
Well, no, it's been an article. So I know. So yeah. So I think that either they're foreshadowing that, or they're just showing something's off with him because he's been involved with the spore drive.
Well, I'm wondering, because we did see previews, we're skipping over the next episode, but we did see previews where it almost looked like the Discovery was in sort of one of those Star Trek time loops. And I'm wondering if this is a foreshadowing of that things are kind of lingering.
And, some echoes, you know, or ripples or something.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
He used proto matter in the spore drive, and it didn't go well.
Oh, or in the silver in the mirror, one or the other.
Well, or it could be that it's not really a mirror as we know it, with the, you know, stuff on the back of glass. Could be a high tech screen. We don't know.
So then, in our next episode, Leth, we have Lathe. What are you calling it today?
Leedy.
We have Sarek on a mission to meet the Klingons. Apparently some houses that supposedly had split and wanted to help defeat Cole. But on his way there, his shuttlecraft was disabled by an explosion. And the explosion was caused by a fellow Vulcan who was a logic extremist who wanted to derail this entire thing. It was a group that didn't want to be involved at all.
There's an interesting insight in there into the whole Vulcan psyche. And, first of all, if I ever start a software company, it's going to be called Vulcan or Logic Extremist, which I think is an awesome software name.
Or your new band name.
Band name would be even better. Yeah. Logic Extremist. But, you know, there's this faction of Vulcans, and you even got this when she was inside of his mind and saying, what is so difficult that you can't tell me about? And he gets that confrontation with the Vulcan, what was it, the group that she wanted to be part of.
Yes.
And
right, the Vulcan exploratory.
There's a bigotry, there's a bias, there's a prejudice towards non-Vulcans, and Sarek is really... Yeah, I'm surprised he's still around. He must have some serious accomplishments and cred to his name, because that's, you know, why they granted him at least one position for one of his children.
But well, I'll, the not I'll, quite Vulcan.
I'll do a plug in here. If you go to The Topic is Trek, my review of Lethe is actually a long article about this issue, about Vulcans and, you know, what your first thoughts about Vulcans are. And when you look at the evidence, how Vulcans really are two different things.
Michael said it's a small faction. So these are extremists. They're the logic extremists. But even that they're tolerated is amazing to me.
Right.
That and that you get an insight, a glimpse into, well, it seems to permeate pretty much into the upper ranks, because the people who make the decisions about who can get into school and who can't are biased that way too. So maybe it's not this small faction. It's really, I thought this was interesting from that aspect of, wow, you know, for being so straight-laced and logical and non-emotional, there sure is a lot of prejudice going on.
Right. And I think that they often try to make the point that Vulcans have emotions. They just repress and control them. So they're there.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you're right. They're even more intense than what we experience.
We've seen that a million times, you know, Vulcans lashing out or, you know, but trying to reel themselves back in. Actually, you know, speaking of which, I felt a lot of emotion for Sarek when he was told only one of your not quite Vulcan children can be in. I was like, oh, that sucks. He's got to choose. And I actually felt bad for him.
Right.
For the first time I've ever seen this character, period, I think I felt, you know, bad for him. And we've seen him before, but
maybe
a little bit in the fatherly side when he was talking to Kirk about, you know, Spock and his contra and stuff. But this is the first time I really felt something for Sarek, because he had to choose. And as I said in After Trek, in a double burn, neither of his kids
right.
Exactly.
Right. He said, I'll not save that, for Spock. Oh, Spock didn't take the spot. Oops. Yeah. Sorry.
Funny story, Dad.
Now you'll see a really angry Vulcan. Dang it. You know what I did for you kids?
I point out in the article that so you have pretty much every child that Sarek raised, you know, just there were issues. You know, Spock went to Starfleet.
He's the Liam Neeson of Vulcan.
Yeah, you know, and then you have Cybok, who just, you know, goes off in a cult of his own. It's like, bad parenting, bad parenting.
You know, Sarek, we appreciate your ambition of raising kids, but you're not really good at it.
Yeah. Well,
stop doing it. Three kids, stop.
And if you'd stick with, you know, maybe they were right. Maybe his experiments with humans were part of that, and he needed to just play the game by the rules.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting to see Burnham standing there when she's being referred to as an experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of look on her face like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking when we were talking about, you know, you have the extremists, then you have Sarek, who's kind of in the middle. He's logical, but he's obviously allows himself to feel some connection and to others and some emotion. And then then you see Michael, Spock, and then you see Cybok, who is the ultimate throwing away his logic side. So, yeah, Sarek sucks.
Yeah.
But yet you feel something for the guy.
Oh, I did. Yeah, yeah. I did. You having to choose one of your children?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, that really is, you know, and the fact that he's torn also gives you some insight that he thinks of them both as his children. And it was also interesting that when he was trying to figure out what the person from the exploratory group was saying, he didn't really think of Spock as not all Vulcan.
Right.
He thought of him as, so he kind of was like, what do you mean one of the, oh, well, your son is only half Vulcan as well. Oh, yes.
Yeah, he stops him in mid-sentence too. It says, he says, your son, he says, Spock is, and gets cut off. He says, only half Vulcan. I'm like, ooh, Snap.
Burn.
So shall we talk about Captain Lorca and the Admiral?
Yes. That was interesting.
They obviously have a history.
They certainly do. And it's my wife called it Bonnie. She called it early when they had the discussion going on when he brought out the brought the booze from under his standing desk.
Yeah, let's stop mm-hmm. talking as officers and start talking as friends. I'm like, wow. Yeah. And she had no problem going there immediately. It's like, oh, okay.
There was, you could tell there, you know, there's a history there. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then she wakes up and there's, she notices scars on his back.
A triangle and a line. Triangle. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, that's not the kind of wound you would get from
a fight,
an explosion.
Yeah.
You know, it's so what is that? And she was puzzled by it where we linger on that. So clearly that means something. And then he pulls out a phaser on her.
Right. So we mentioned this early on that he's damaged goods and this is coming to the fore and she calls him out and says, you know, when I get back, I'm going to have you step down. And then she obviously gets caught by the Klingons, and he makes no effort. In fact, he suppresses Saru's effort to think alternatively and says, no, we can't risk the discovery being captured. Mm-hmm. It's too valuable.
It's fun because, you know, here's Saru going, okay, I'm finally getting into the groove of this is what we do. We think outside the box. We go rescue you. We go do this. We go,
right.
We go save Saru. Got it. We're going to go do this, right? Not so much.
His ganglia starts coming out. Okay, something's weird. Hey, but here's the aspect. You mentioned, Clinton, you put the bug in my head about Lorca might not be who he seems to be.
Yeah.
And after his... You know, they did linger on the scars to kind of point them out. Of course, he had the phaser in his belt and everything. But when Saru says, hey, let's go do this. And he says, no, contact Saru. I think maybe if he is something other than he's not, I think he was probably getting, he was like, okay, maybe I need to step back a little bit because they're getting ready to boot me out. And I can't. So he's, you know, trying to still work his, angle itself to stay.
Okay. Since we're kind of dancing around that, we've already run spoiler alert. So the theory that's going around currently.
Is this the Ash theory?
Yes, this is the Ash Tyler theory.
Okay. I am completely, just for listener disclaimer, I am insulated. I have heard nothing of this. You guys were on a Facebook discussion where the three of us were going, and I muted that discussion because I had work to do. So I know nothing at this point. So what's
it was
the
late at night. There was nothing to do.
All right. The theory is the character Vok, who we've seen in the first several episodes, the albino who was, is now the torchbearer. So we haven't seen him lately. The actor who plays that character, if you go to IMDb or the credits, that actor only has one credit, and the one credit is for Star Trek Discovery, and there's no photo of that actor. It's just a photo of the character.
Okay.
And so people are saying that that character sacrificed everything.
Which is how the last time we saw him.
Tyler.
Yeah, last time we saw him, his Klingon girlfriend said, in order to Lorel. Do that, you're going to have to sacrifice everything.
And clearly his highest held belief is remain Klingon. So, okay, what more sacrifice can you make than to be altered into being a human?
Than not being remaining Klingon.
So the theory is that Ash is Klingon. He does mysteriously appear on this Klingon prison ship. So you think now he's a mole.
Right, because, I mean, one thing that I thought of right away, and I'm going, well, you know, read into much, don't read too much into it.
Right.
When Lorca says that you're lying, you can't have been here 7 months, you know, on a ship like this. And he says, well, you know, the captain is taking a liking to me. But the captain on the ship is Lorel. And Lorel could have only been there, 3 weeks?
Was so that Lorel? Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, stupid
so that accounts for 3 weeks out of 7 months. So
she had the white armor with the little finger, fingernail red things.
How did Ash learn to speak such good English in such short time?
So I have problems with the theory, and the theory may hold water if you jump through hoops of saying, well, this actually is Ash Tyler, but somehow he's been augmented by Vok. Somehow his mind is, there's some way that he's inhabiting the body, perhaps, and is sharing the thoughts with, so he can speak English and has human emotions and all those type of things. But I think it's a lot of hoops to jump through. And then people are saying, well, as soon as Ash Tyler walks into Lorca's office and that Tribble is there, it's going to squeal away.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know what to make of it. And then I said, what I was talking to about with Craig was that, you have a scene where Lorca is dragged off and you assume to be interrogated by Laurel.
Yeah.
Well, what if she was doing something else and he has been turned into the spy, the avatar of Vok? Because suddenly you now have him really desperate to make sure that he stays on that ship.
I have a harder time with that one for some reason.
And I'm not saying it's a great theory. I'm saying they're both theories. I mean, a lot of people are saying, okay, well, now we're all set on who Ash Tyler is. And I'm going, yeah, probably, but it's still a fan theory
right at
this point about it. And I don't know if it's the sort of thing that, because it was interesting to note that at the beginning of Left, that they had Lorca and Tyler going through that simulation, the hologram simulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's peppering him with questions about, well, where were you born? And blah, blah, blah. What did your mother do? And that's not really in Seattle and da, 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 da. But we don't get to find out the answer to, was he given a medical exam?
Oh, good point. So
I don't know if the answer to that is yes or no. And you would think if somebody's coming on who's been a prisoner for 7 months on a ship, you would think
be under observation for a while or something.
Isn't that a little bit?
What if they're both Klingon?
Ooh, what if everyone is Klingon?
Yeah, except for Ash and Lorca. Oh.
Yeah.
And T'Kuvma, he was,
he's a poser. T'Kuvma comes back.
Okay, I'll give you that.
I'm kind of sold on Ash being some kind of ringer for, mole for the Klingons, or is Vok
from the Klingons. You want to have those situations like you had last week where to throw you off track or to ingratiate the character, to have him be the person that encourages Burnham to go back into the mind meld and gives her advice on, what she needs to do, and he gets them back safely. So those are the sort of things to throw the viewer off that track and to throw the characters off that track, that there's anything to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
From that aspect, go ahead.
I was going to say the other funny thing about it, I'm sure they are pulling strings around this production if there is a big twist like this, and there's got to be something that, I'm going to mess his name up, but Shahzad Latif, who plays Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been credited the entire time that the show has been running at the beginning of the show as being, one of the main cast, but not, Javed, Iqbal, who's playing Vok, so that people are like, oh, wait, he must be playing both parts. And this is a throwaway, the Javed. Anyway.
Yeah, so my guess is if this is true, that when we get to episode 9, which is the one just before the break, that's when this would come out. Either we would know or everyone on Discovery would know. I just have a feeling that's your cliffhanger to pull you through. If this is indeed a fact, that would be like, ah, oh, I can't. And then you wait 2 months to find out what happens.
Yeah. And somebody else mentioned that they're hitting all the story beats from the Trouble with Tribbles throughout this last several episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the Tribble thing, I would be disappointed if that was
the Klingon detector.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, that's too much over the top.
Klingon detector. You know,
in that case, you'd always have Tribbles on every single ship. In a box or something, you know, somehow figure out how you spay and neuter them, like clearly Lorca was able to do, and just have one everywhere, you know.
Well, you get yourself a couple of Glommer and they go nuts, you know. They eat Tribbles. True. It's all good.
It's all good.
That was just a tasty bit of weird trivia stuck in the back of my head.
Yeah.
From the anime.
Like, that's
series.
The only bit of strange trivia in the back of your head.
Well, the fact that I could recall the name of that thing that eats Tribbles from the animated series. See, it's cartoons. Remember the trivia panel at Dragon Con? It's cartoons. That's all I need.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Well, this is only 22 episodes of the animated series, so it makes it a lot easier.
Right.
And Ren and Stimpy.
Let's. Yeah. So any more thoughts on these two episodes?
Lots of interesting loose ends to tie up.
Right. And with the story continuing like this, that's going to be the way we end up every single week, is we do get to see, apparently next episode, Harry Mudd somehow has made his way off of the Klingon prison ship.
And he's going to be mad.
Yeah.
I did like Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd. I think it'll work out pretty good.
Yes. I think
the writing is spot on, because I really wouldn't care for the show if it was that predictable that we went, oh, saw that coming a mile away. It's fun to play speculation, be proved wrong. That means the writing is done really well.
Yep.
Or even if you're right, it's still like, well, that was clever. And I think the difference between watching that as a movie and not picking up on that and watching it as a series is you've got an hour a week to mull, think, review, check. Fact check, an hour, fact check, you know. Yep. So hopefully they're clever enough that's not the actual thing, but we'll see. And soon enough, I've just got this feeling, soon enough, we'll see.
Yeah, in March.
Oh, there's a Tribble. Yeah. But it's a happy Tribble, so there's no Klingons here. Oops.
Come on in, Ash.
Come on in, Ash. Hey, what are you doing? Come on in.
How about some Saurian brandy? Don't mind him. He's just had a bad week.
Those things.
All right, we're back from main mission and time for a quick warp speed round table. That's our theme for this episode. This is a little game I like to call Marooned on Delta Vega.
Little game.
One of my favorites, I'm sure.
If you were stuck on Delta Vega, which two Star Trek movies would you want with you? Oh, and why? I'm going to start with Craig on this one.
Oh, good.
I would say Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan, because of its replayability. Mm-hmm. It's fun to watch. And Star Trek 2009, so to remind me how old the movie was, the Delta Vega was represented in the movie as opposed to how warm and sunny it is when I'm actually on it. So there you go.
Very good. Very good. I also would choose Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan for all the reasons, including the fact that it's just plain awesome. And also Star Trek 2009, because if I've only got one other thing to have with me, I'd like it to be something where it kind of feels like it's the beginning. And that movie is an origin story of the characters. And it just feels like that's a nice thing to always have, is that starting point to go from. And how about you, Chuck?
It's funny you said Delta Vega, because if you'd said Tantalus Colony, I would have gone, of course, with Final Frontier. You gotta have something to punish the prisoners, right?
I love this movie.
That's wonderful.
The venue sets the whole tone for which movies you bring along.
Just leave me alone. Don't. No movie. Just leave me alone in the chair.
What, looking at the bottom of a Gatorade bottle. Hey, you ever look at the bottom of a Gatorade bottle? That's what it looks like. It looks like the spinny light thing.
You're going back to Stamets. Stop now.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a new expression on this show. You've gone back to Stamets.
Yeah. You're in Stamets mode.
It's all cool, man. You gotta let like the SETI slug get into your vertebrae.
Right. All right, so what's the other one?
Don't wait for the translation, sir. Answer the question.
Yeah.
I was also going to pick Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, but I still have a soft spot in my heart for First Contact.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to avoid giving a choice of three movies because I think that makes it a lot easier. It's just down to two. Give you more than one.
Yeah.
But you got two, which sounds like if it was down to just one, I would go with Wrath of Khan.
I would still say 2009 because, again, I want to remember how or realize how cold it could be, but yeah. It's not.
Like, well, yeah, you're on the mining planet version of Delta Vega there. You know, it's kind of, maybe the planet just has those two regions. You can be mining over here and it's just snowstorms over there.
In all fairness, we didn't see the other side of the planet in 2009.
Yeah, there's a tropical beach. It's a great place. We got the low rent district.
That's right.
Bummer, man.
When they were picking locations, that one was already being used for another show.
Yeah. Gilligan's
Welcome
Island remake.
To Fantasy Island.
Gilligan's Island 2009. Gilligan's Island
2009. Little buddy, the gravity is low. Skipper, oxygen.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I do want to mention, if you don't already know, the penultimate Star Trek Continues episode is up.
Yes.
For October. And I found it was pretty good. And I'm looking forward to the finale. Well, I'm not really looking forward to it because it's the finale, but I'm looking forward to the finale.
Why don't you put a link to that in the show notes as well?
Yeah, I'll throw that in there when we post the show.
Done and done.
Alrighty. Well, we're back from our Warp Speed Roundtable, and it's time to boldly go that away until next episode. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out our other mostly non-Trek related podcasts, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt. Groovy.
We have some.
Put the shirt on that says just disco on it.